Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Today we heard the news of another Taliban suicide bomber in Afghanistan who attacked a restaurant in Kabul popular with foreigners, killing 21 people, including three United Nations staff members. It was the latest act of violence to shake the Afghan capital, and it reminded us of our interview last summer with Qais Akbar Omar, which we thought we'd listen back to now. Qais grew up in Afghanistan and lives in Quincy. When we spoke to him last August, he just published his memoir about his childhood in Afghanistan and what happened to his family when civil war tore his country apart. His small apartment in Quincy is full of memories. Paintings of a marketplace in Kabul, Afghan blankets, carpets, and books of Afghan poetry. And a blue china teapot to make tea for his guests in a bit of traditional Afghan hospitality. Qais is studying for a master's degree in creative writing at Boston University. His memoir is called A Fort of Nine Towers, which tells the story of the Kabul of his childhood, a peaceful, beautiful city, much different than the one depicted in the news today.
There were trees on both sides of the streets that made like an arch, leafy arch. That was Kabul, very green, very beautiful, and it was just different. It was different, and people were so educated, so conscious of the environment, trying to make life better for their kids.
But in the 1990s, civil war tore the country apart and changed his life dramatically. Qais was only 10 when his family had to flee, leaving behind their comfortable home and everything they owned, including their livelihood, as carpet sellers. He was imprisoned and several times faced what seemed like certain death at the hands of rebels. Qais can't return to his home country because of his memoir, but he says he had to write it, most importantly as a response to the trauma he suffered and to quiet his nightmares, which he says nearly paralyzed him.
I'm a corporate businessman. You have to be, you know, very friendly, and you have to socialize with people all the time. And if you're in that kind of a state, you can't do much. Then I told some of my friends, I was not shy, that this is what's going on with me and what should I do? Well, they said the best thing is to write it. I wrote like 20 pages and probably, you know, until 2 in the morning. And then I could not stop. And,
so it just sort of gushed out of you.
Exactly. It's like a flood, you know, just once it came, nothing can stop it. Yeah. I could not tell whether it was daytime or nighttime. Sometimes I was crying, sometimes laughing, sometimes tears rolling out of my eyes without control over it.
It's amazing.
I no longer had those nightmares and dreams that haunted me and left me shattered for days and weeks, sometimes even months.
One of the things you write so beautifully early on in the book is about life in Kabul before the Mujahideen came, before the Taliban came, and it was such a beautiful family life that you describe.
Mm-hmm. When people hear the word Afghanistan and the West, they associate it with the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, or, you know, destruction, warlord. But that was what life was. I used to live in a courtyard that my grandfather built, and it was about 3 acres surrounded by walls. And we had about, I don't know, 100 Macintosh apple trees, a large number of, you know, rose bushes and geraniums and hollyhocks.
From what you wrote about and what you describe, it sounds like a kind of paradise almost. And then you describe in such detail how that paradise really came apart and how you had to have life on the run, essentially, for a long, long time. And your family really had to live like refugees for years. And I'm just wondering how you kept your hope, your faith. You didn't give up. You didn't despair.
You know, my grandfather installed and has a very good sense of, like, a wisdom. I don't know how to describe that. There was one time that we were both captured by some warlords and they were about to kill us. And there were lines all over the wall written like, once you walk into this room, you won't walk out alive. Mm-hmm. So my grandfather looked at me and smiled and he said, why not you write something like, life is entrapping the bird in a cage And that is opening that cage. Everything, the whole thing changes, you know.
So when you faced a difficult situation, you'd remember sort of the opposite, how to make it positive, it sounds like.
Exactly. And also, when the whole thing happened, I was so young. For my parents, they had the worst time of their life. Mm. But for me and for my sisters, camping one day along the mountain, it was like, you know, having fun. Of course, they had to look after us, to feed us, to clothe us, to look, sure, you know, so we don't die of some starvation or sickness or something. But we really enjoyed, you know, it was like an adventure going all over the country. And for me, it was like a lesson that you cannot learn in any school, learning about your country, your people, and how people lived. So one day you're living on the bottom of a mountain like nomads. The next day you're living in a cave where thousands of years ago, and monks used to live there.
Sure.
And Bamiyan.
You didn't despair. You didn't think, you know, we used to live in this beautiful house in a courtyard, yeah, and now we're on the run. You just saw it as...
Well, you really miss that kind of, you know, good food. You know, going to school every day and having fun and, you know, riding your camel. But then you are here with the nomads. You don't have one camel. You have 1,000 camels. Or when you're living in a cave, you're not at home, surrounded with all the beautiful stuff around the house that all belong to you. And in the cave, there is nothing. All you see is just a dark hole and some nice, beautiful paintings from the Buddhists that they painted a long time ago. So you say, well, I had a lot of nice things in Kabul, but I did not have this cave. And I did not have all these paintings.
It's a good lesson about how to put things in perspective, it seems to me.
Yeah.
You were subjected, and your family was subjected, to all kinds of cruelty, and you cheated death at least 3 times. At one point, the Taliban threw you in jail because you didn't wear a turban. Mm-hmm.
If I gave up on life, I'm too weak, and I'm not too weak. You know that these people come and go. That's the whole thing. Each regime does not last for a very long time. You know, you kind of struggle with it. I mean, that's, and then you see people around you, and you notice that you're not the only one suffering. So you have the whole nation there with you, going through the same thing. I think that's something that gives you, in a way, some kind of moral support that I'm not the only one.
Now that you've written this book, I understand that it's difficult for you to think about going back to Afghanistan, at least now, mm-hmm, right? Why can't you go back now that you've written this book?
A lot of the things that I have written in this book is what we went through, mm-hmm, our family went through. I did not talk specifically about one faction or a group or anything or anyone individually who caused all these problems, but they're all there. Mm-hmm. And all those people are still in charge in Afghanistan. I was not expecting this book to get published in many languages and get so much publicity. It was more like to get rid of all my dreams. And now I put myself in a kind of dangerous position if I go back. And so.
Let me ask you about this history of intervention. And you write about this, actually, the English, the Russians, the Americans, and then even this history of sort of intervention within, whether it's the Mujahideen or the Taliban. What do we need to understand about that? How does Afghanistan move away from this constant flow of intervention, which, yeah, seems to cause so much pain and,
yeah,
problem?
Yeah. People who go to Afghanistan invade, you can choose many names for it, but at the end of the day, you call it all invasion. As an American, I would say you just have to read Afghan history. Alexander the Great came there. He was stuck there for 3 years. He wrote a letter to his mother saying that walking into this land is easy, but walking out is not so.
Right, Mama, get me out of here.
Exactly. That was Alexander. And then Englishmen came 3 times, invaded Afghanistan. 3 times they were defeated. And then Russians came. They were there for 10 years and they were defeated. And now you have Americans like, what the hell are you thinking? Why do you think that you will succeed here? Americans so far spent $500 billion, which we know of, on their military activities. And look where we are now. The Taliban are completely back. We are in the worst place.
So what's the future hold? Is it best for the Americans just to get out completely and leave Afghanistan to its own devices?
I don't think that's a good idea. Okay, suppose you are walking out from Afghanistan tomorrow. The Taliban are back. So now basically they're running the country. They have more money and weapons than before. And then you have the Pakistani Taliban leaking into Afghanistan every day. And you have the Pakistan Intelligence Service, which is meddling with Afghanistan's affairs for the past 30 years or so. So as soon as you walk out, do you think these people will be, you know, get together, get along, and then they will do something? No. People like us will suffer. Mm. And I think America is in a position to talk, put all these people together, and come to a solution.
Kais, let me ask you one last question just about this book and about the sort of beautiful tapestry you've really woven with words about what life was like for you growing up. What do you miss most?
So many things. I can give you a list that will last probably all day long. But more than anything, at night we all gather, and then every night we have at least 2, 3, 5, sometimes 10 to 20 guests. And so we all sit around one tablecloth, and after we finish eating, then we turn off all the lights. We put a candle in the middle of the room, and there are like 20 or 30 people around the room sitting, and then we have a poetry contest. The subject tonight is love that we talk about. So I recite 2 verses from Omar Khayyam, for example, and then you communicate with me with 2 verses from another poet, and that goes on for 3 hours. That I miss the most. I miss the most of that.
Well, Kais Akbar Omar, it's a lovely image that you leave us with. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.
Kais Akbar Omar is studying creative writing at Boston University. His book about his family's life in Afghanistan and attempts to flee the fighting there is called A Fort of Nine Towers. You can read an excerpt at radioboston.org.